Well, good morning. Welcome. It is Election Day 2018, and we are here. And it is a very exciting day as we begin our coverage. Of course, coverage began during Morning Edition this morning, but we are very excited at WAMC. Our broadcast day is filled with election coverage. We have reporters and correspondents throughout the region, up and down in, what, five states? And so it's quite an operation. Our wonderful news director, Ian Pickett, has done a great job being our ringleader. So we'll be covering this all day. Of course, we'll have the panel this morning talking about it. Midday Magazine at noon today with full coverage. Then official coverage will begin, of course, Northeast Report Late Edition. And then at night, we will be doing the coverage beginning at 7 o'clock. Alan and I will be on 8 o'clock, 9 o'clock hour, and then we'll be here through ..
As long as it takes?
As long as it takes.
Holy
oh,
moly.
We're dedicated, Alan.
I'm really
remembering
impressed.
That it starts 2 hours after my bedtime.
I know that, but it could go on, they say, for a couple of days.
Yeah.
Well, we probably won't be there. Yeah, we'll head out at some point. But and then tomorrow morning, we are going to be over at the Linda with a panel of all-stars, and we will be there talking about the election results. And we have a full crowd, and if you pledge tickets and you have gotten them, please come be with us. We have breakfast. Doors open at 8:15. The broadcast will go from 9 to 11. And obviously, we know some of you have to work, so if you have to dip in, dip out, that is fine. But we would love to have you for our broadcast. The questions will come from you. So to all of our experts on the panel, we will we'll be talking to you tomorrow in our audience. And of course, we want you to listen to it. So we'll have a lot going on over the next 36 hours, and we can all pass out.
Do you have room for more people at the Linda?
No.
You mean as in the audience?
In the audience.
We are full.
You're full.
Well, we're full unless people who have tickets don't show up.
In which case, they'll call us today and tell us, I'm not coming, and we'll know we can
and
do
we can find And we
that
can find out
nice,
a few
right,
more. Right.
That's called a responsible thing.
And how
do.
About if they make another pledge today?
I don't think that would that's help.
Yeah, see, we're full. We are full.
How big a pledge?
That's right.
Let me answer this with two words. Fire marshal.
Yeah, that's right. That's
the
a big
fire
thing.
Marshal. Yeah.
End of discussion.
That's right. And quite frankly, we're getting to the point where we have as many panelists as we have audience members. So
it gets a little much on stage.
I see.
It really does. Yeah. It's a little crowded.
We have a lot.
There.
We want everyone's opinion up there. So we got that. We have a lot to talk about. Let's get to it. Let me introduce the group to you this morning. And what a group it is. Former Albany Common Council President Helen DeFossus, whose voice you just heard. Good morning, Helen.
Anything. Good morning, Joe, and everyone else. I'm thrilled to be here.
Anything but common.
Yes, anything. great to be here. And I know you're headed back home today, so thank you for being
thank
with
you
us.
Very
nice to have you with us. To your right, perhaps appropriately, J.P. Miller is... No, okay, no. All right. Is with us. He is the Empire Report, doing very good work, and we thank you
very much for being
with us.
Good morning.
Good morning, good morning. Mike Spain is the associate editor of the Times Union. And, Mike, we welcome you to the program.
Thank you. Happy
Thank
to
you
be
very
here.
Much. Mike will be with us tomorrow as well, and we're thrilled about that. Libby Post is a political consultant, and she is a very busy woman these days. And I think, like the rest of us, can't wait for the next 36 hours to be over with.
Oh, but, you have no idea.
Right. But she's with us this morning. She'll be with us tomorrow morning, and we're thrilled about that as well.
Good morning, dear.
Good to see you.
It's great.
All right. And Alan Chartok is here. The Iron Horse of Broadcasting is with us. And good morning, sir. How are you?
Hey.
Very nice to have you. And, of course, to have you on the have you join us and listen to the show. I said this during the introduction, but, you know, go out and vote. And probably our listeners, probably you already have. But if you haven't... Now's the time. I have to say, this is a very anecdotal story, but I will tell it anyway. I went to my little polling place in Jackson, New York. Little tiny town.
I'm going to Jackson.
In Washington County, New York.
Little teeny tiny.
Little teeny tiny town. And at 6:40 in the morning, I was number 46. But by the time I got out, they were up to number 62.
Wow.
That's impressive,
incredible.
Considering Last year in an off-year election, I went to vote at 6:30, and I was number 16.
I got a text from a good friend who does the poll watching and works the polls in Milton.
And everybody's a girl.
Where's that?
Milton is in Saratoga County. It's, you know,
near Wilton.
Saratoga-ish.
Okay. Yeah, Saratoga-ish. 2.5 hours in, just her district, her election district, 72 voters.
Yeah, and just, again, anecdotal, but just driving in this morning and passing many, many, yes, many polling places along the way, they're packed and ready. So yes, that's a good sign. We've been talking about people getting out and voting, and it seems, that again, anecdotally, that is certainly the case. So that's good news, but we still have a lot of day left.
But it'll be very interesting to hear the panel this morning on what their base emotion is as we face this election, and mine is abject fear. And I think a lot of people can relate to it based on 2016, you know, and what happened as we were all assured that there was an 83% chance.
Right.
The
is
same
it?
83% that tells us the House is going to flip today.
These are probably similar, but is that fear or trust? I mean, meaning that we have a fear because we can't trust the information that we trusted two years ago.
No, I think it's an amalgam which ends up as fear. I don't really know all of the things that are part of it. But I read my Times Union from front to back, as I do, you know, every morning as soon as it comes out in the middle of the night. And I can tell you that you know, there's a lot of information that we're getting from pollsters and others, and even the pollsters seem to be
they're conflicted. They're not making many predictions.
And then you read all these alternate stories. One said the race is really tightening now, and the pollsters are saying there's much less of a spread than they thought, and that puts fear into your gut.
Well, I'm really fearful because listening to the president, and yesterday, the more he was on, the more extreme he got, and the angrier he got, and the more anti-immigrant he got, and the more he fell back on his classic, you know, anti-immigrant, anti-other.
And yet,
message. And yet, racist message.
I don't know about fall back. I mean, that's been his position.
Well, that's what I mean. Yeah,
he
went to his default position. Yeah.
It worked in 2016. Why
that's
would
right.
It work
right.
Again?
I mean, exactly, he started Mike. With it, and he's back with it.
And yet, Helen, you know, when you looked at him yesterday, he was all over doing a sort of a mea culpa, saying, "I wish I hadn't been." Quite as, you know, I could have toned it down a bit. I know that he got asked that question, and they played it again and again and again.
Yeah, but then he went back and doubled down. Yeah. You know, it was.
Well, I'm not defending him.
All right,
we'll make
a T-shirt of that.
I'm just saying I get the technique. I know what he's doing, which is basically they're telling him, look, if you had shut up a little bit and if you had been a little bit more accessible, you would have done better. And he knows that.
So we are all political wonks in this room. We watch this stuff like a hawk. We love it. We eat it. We breathe it. And we enjoy it. So the bit. Oh, come on. You get a paycheck. Calm down. So
we all love it.
Don't you like what you do?
Yes, I do love what I do.
All right.
It's just, you know, after when you get to the last week of this, it's just,
okay,
you know, between everybody yelling at you, why do you put so many commercials on the air? And I want to see the McDonald's commercial and not the Fazzo Delgado commercial, and you know, and all that sort of stuff.
Well,
not
who
that
doesn't
I did
want
those.
To see a Where quarter pounder with cheese,
anyway.
For goodness sake.
You know, it just, it's, you know, I do love it, though.
So I'm just going to turn, because you know, we're all interested in this stuff. So all of the junkies this morning, especially in this area, are fascinated because of a reversal in an endorsement by the Times Union.
Yeah.
And since we have the associate editor of the paper here, I would like to spend at least a quarter of a minute on this. But the newspaper, the Times Union, endorsed several weeks ago endorsed the incumbent, Jim Todisco, from Schenectady. And yesterday, in what I would say and I think even you characterized it, the paper characterized it.
Unprecedented.
I've never heard of such a thing.
So what led to that? I know there's the political stuff, but let's talk about the journalistic machinations that went on to reverse an endorsement.
It is extraordinarily unusual. What happened was after we did endorse Jim Tedesco and
over
Michelle
Osterlich,
the Democrat. He's an incumbent Republican state senator running for a second term in the Senate. He had spent his career in the Assembly, and he came in for his editorial endorsement. And there's a series of questions that we ask all the candidates for state office, Senate, and Assembly. It includes whether you'll support the women's health bill. The reproductive health bill that's in the state legislature, which would codify Roe versus Wade, and this would be a protection. This is seen by many. Now, there's also a debate about exactly what it means, but it's seen by many as a way to put into state health department code the protections in case something happens. In Washington, the Supreme Court weakens Roe versus Wade. New York would still have the same, women would have the same rights to abortion services and reproductive services, and that would be the way it is. He indicated that he would go along with it and accept it. He says that was a misunderstanding on the editorial board's part. And
that he didn't really mean the
he over the weekend language. Asserted his much more conservative point of view about legalized abortion, that it should only happen in the case of the life of a mother or rape or incest, which is a very conservative position, and he reasserted that. The problem was the editorial ran Thursday. We heard about it Sunday that he was telling others that he was misquoted by the Times Union and suggested that maybe we fed him incorrect information deliberately. But so we ended up reviewing everything and decided that part of it was, something that factored in. And it was the editorial board's decision to rescind the editorial endorsement and endorse his opponent. And that's very unusual, but it's
never been done before, right?
Not that we know of.
And yeah. Mike, are you on the editorial board?
I am.
Okay,
but it is a collective process, and
so did you feel a little like Jim Comey?
That's a really good question. It's something we really, really dreaded, and we didn't want to do it, but it was something we decided as a board to do, and it's very interesting.
Was it done in time to make a difference?
So let me ask Libby this question. Now, I know you have an official position with the campaign? Okay, so you're sort of on the...
I've been watching this campaign.
Okay.
And yes, it is enough to make a difference because it broke yesterday at the Times Union website, 4 or 5 o'clock in the afternoon. The campaign was able to print... Thousands of pieces, breaking news, Times Union retracts the Disco endorsement, endorses Michelle Osterlich. It went all over Niskayuna, went all over Schenectady.
Is that a close race at all?
Well, it remains to be seen. She has done an incredible job of mobilizing people. She's well-loved in the community. She's been all over the district. She did a 55 towns, villages, and cities tour in 55 days over the summer. She's listened to a lot of people. She's talked to them about the issues. Healthcare is a big one. People are concerned as to whether or not they can take their kids to the doctor if they don't have the money to pay and blah, blah, blah.
But there haven't been polls
or
anything.
There hasn't been any polling lately. But I can tell you that I think that the Disco campaign is nervous, has been nervous, and she did a great job at the debate. And they got this out, and I think that given all the factors that are going on right now, all the women that are coming out, the 350 volunteers she has, this base that she's got throughout the Senate district, this could be the sleeper campaign and election
of
this cycle.
Basketball?
Huh? No, she does not play basketball, but she does fish.
Is an extraordinarily popular politician. He's been around.
This would be his third
years. It'll be his second term
in the Hugh Farley seat.
He took the seat that Hugh Farley had. This is a district that goes way up into Hamilton County, parts of Saratoga, Schenectady County. It's huge.
Herkimer.
Right, and it. It's a traditionally a Republican district,
but he is popular,
and he's very popular, and he has extraordinary energy and constituent relations. He shows up everywhere. I mean, it will be considered an upset if he does not win re-election. But you know, this is the year of the women. You know that there's more women running in New York this time this year. I think David. Lombardo, our political reporter, had a piece today about how more women are in the races statewide, and it's going to have an impact on the outcome. The state Senate could go Democratic. People expect it to. It needs just one vote to win, and it will be a woman who will be the majority leader for the first time.
But there is a certain irony here. Yeah. Todisco, we all know, had been waiting for many, many years for Hugh Farley to step aside and to take that seat, because he had to get out of the assembly where, as you know,
about 30 seconds.
Yeah, there was an assemblyman, a Republican assemblyman, has the power of warm spit.
He got some things through. In all fairness, he did reach across the aisle and get things.
So he finally gets to the Senate, and now the Senate's going to probably flip.
Right, and he didn't get much through in his 1 year in the majority in the Senate either. He was okay. We'll go.
Okay.
Okay.
Just plant your rage for a second. I'll
it's
be
not
right
rage.
Back.
It's just information.
Okay. Sure. We'll be right back right after this. Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion this morning.
Libby wants the floor.
We're all in feisty moods this morning.
Yeah, we are. We've been up too late.
Libby wants the floor. Well, we just want to clarify your relationship to the campaign. So I asked you the question of whether you were working for the campaign.
I'm consulting with the campaign.
Okay. So I just want that to
I'm
make sure that that's clear.
Campaign.
Okay.
Yes.
And no, go ahead.
Ignorant me. I'm interested in the media. In terms of the Times Union editorial endorsements, if someone wants to be endorsed, do they have to support the Women's Health Act, or they could
not?
They don't need to. It's just they have to be frank with you and honest.
Many factors goes into whether we endorse somebody, and it's not one single thing. It's many things, and I'll leave it at that.
And it was a tough process. I mean, when I came before the Times Union editorial board years ago, it was the questions were really tough.
Did you get the endorsement?
Yes.
And one other thing.
Are you an Albany Democrat? I mean, who was Frank?
hey, JP, I think I see some blood in your eye.
One other question. You must have done dozens of editorial board meetings this year with candidates and all that. Other than Jim Todisco, were there any other candidates that were maybe disingenuous or dishonest with you during any part of that?
I didn't say that he was disingenuous and dishonest. Mm-hmm. I said that I told you what happened.
Oh.
But anyway, as a matter of fact, since you asked, of all the state Senate and Assembly candidates that came in that we asked the same long list of questions to, none of them said we got it wrong and there was a misunderstanding. So it was a.
What about other than that? What about any other races other than state Senate or Assembly? Was there any candidates that were maybe disingenuous or dishonest during the meeting with you?
I feel like you're leading the witness. Is there a candidate you're thinking of that may have fallen into that?
I heard a recording, which I was surprised was put on the internet about the governor and him being investigated with regards to Crystal Run.
Right. When Andrew Cuomo came in seeking an editorial endorsement, we asked him some specific questions about a project in the Hudson Valley that the Times Union's Chris Bragg has been writing a lot about, where these principals in a medical company had given a couple hundred thousand dollars over a period of 2 days to the governor's campaign. Mm-hmm. Wow. And then soon after that, they were awarded a $1 million grant by the state health department.
That's a hell of a story.
And the buildings were already, the building for which the grant was given was already under construction, you know, and they've had their explanations, and we've followed that story. They actually contacted the campaign of a Hudson Valley congressman who they had given a contribution to and said, hold on that one. We probably, that may be subject to recall or something. There may be a problem with the donation. And we wondered if they had sent a letter to the governor's campaign to alert them that his campaign contributions might be in question. He said, no, absolutely not. And some days afterwards, he let
us
know.
Wait a second, I'm sorry, Mike, who said no, absolutely
not? Oh, the governor.
The governor,
yeah. The governor said his campaign did not get such a letter from the Crystal Run attorney.
Right. And it's excellent tape if you listen to it.
Yeah.
It's...
In fact, he did call afterwards and say, you know, some days later and said, I was wrong. I was unaware of it. They did send a letter to our campaign, and I was not told about it and acknowledged it. And said he's setting, put that money aside until the questions are cleared up, and he'll donate them to charity if it turns out they're tainted, if they're deemed not to be legal campaign.
So he fessed up to making a mistake.
Right.
Well, he fessed up because they had the goods on him.
Well.
So President Trump said yesterday that he was unaware of this terribly racist commercial that was being shown on his behalf.
And I have a bridge
he
I'd
said,
like to
I don't
you.
Know anything about it.
Which is strange because the guy never lies.
Yeah.
Well, I mean,
it really is.
It's
going
such
down
an
to
odd
the
thing.
Yeah. Such racism.
All right, so let's go to the.
I think we're there.
Well, that's absolutely true. So, where I would like to begin, however, is without evidence, Donald Trump and Jeff Sessions are warning of voter fraud in today's elections. This is front page of the Washington Post. President Trump and Attorney General Jeff Sessions on Monday issued strong warnings about the threat of voter fraud in Tuesday's elections, echoing the president's baseless claims that massive voter fraud marred his 2016 election. You know, the one where he won?
Yes, right.
That comes out of the Times, Joe?
The Washington Post.
Washington Post.
And prompting accusations that his administration is trying to intimidate voters. In a tweet early Monday, Trump said that the law enforcement has been strongly notified to watch for, all capital letters, illegal voting. He promised that anyone caught voting improperly would be subjected to, quote, maximum criminal penalties. Sessions, in a statement laying out the Justice Department's plans to monitor ballot access on Election Day, said, quote, fraud in the voting process will not be tolerated, which is good to know, and fraud also corrupts the integrity of the ballot. In remarks to reporters on his way to a campaign rally in Cleveland, Trump also falsely claimed that voter fraud is commonplace in the United States of America.
Which is what he did in 2006, you know.
Well, so
he's running.
Rigged.
This is
his,
everything
he's
rigged.
He formed
approach.
A commission to look into voter irregularities
which
in the
we never
2016
heard
Well, they imploded.
They couldn't find any.
And they couldn't find
any. They stopped.
And then they blamed certain state attorney generals for not cooperating with them. Yeah.
And did they have a D after their names, all those attorney generals?
It did get partisan. But, but in fact, they did not come up with any evidence of widespread voter fraud.
In the meantime, his people, in other words, known as the Republicans, are doing some incredible things, like in Georgia.
Right.
Yes, in Georgia.
Well, that's voter suppression. Now, let's just define our terms, honestly.
Absolutely, Mike.
There's voter fraud.
Yeah.
And there's voter suppression. Voter suppression is much more effective. You can keep people away from the polls. It affects the outcome of the election.
And I take it you're being serious here, right?
I certainly am.
Oh, you are?
Voter suppression is different than voter fraud.
No, no, Mike, you're right. Voter suppression is different from voter fraud, but it's disgusting. And it is disgusting.
It's putting barriers in front of people who should legally be able to vote and keep them from the polls.
But the threats of voter fraud...
That's like where immigrants, you know, lie and say they can vote and then vote.
Right,
he thought there was millions that
yes,
did it,
but
it just wasn't true.
But what he's doing in this article and talking about voter fraud adds to suppression because it keeps people at home because they're afraid to come out and
vote. But it's also setting the table for tomorrow morning if Democrats take the House or if Democrats take the Senate or if Democrats take both or even if they don't.
He'll say it was fraud.
It was fraud.
And by the way, I just want to go on record as saying I really disagree with Mike. I thought he was kidding around. I think that voter suppression and voter fraud are at least kissing cousins.
Well, they're talking about illegal voting. What they're talking about here, and that was the sign he had, illegal voting.
What about unconstitutional?
This is keeping people from legally voting. It's
Mike, I don't want to fight with you here because I know you're important and a friend of Rex's, and I don't want to do that.
One has nothing to do with the other.
No, nothing has to do with anything. But I do want to make it clear that I think voter suppression in the United States, which we see, is not only
it's a form of voter fraud.
Yes.
And okay.
Well, how are you defining voter suppression for the listener? No, the
putting
listeners that are out there,
like
because
in
a lot
Georgia,
of people,
like you referenced.
Well, at the risk of getting involved in an argument I don't want to get into, but I was always under the impression there was a distinct difference between voter suppression and voter fraud.
Me too.
Well, there's a difference, of course, but one is unconstitutional. We're supposed to have ballot access, and the fact that these guys, including the Secretary of State in Georgia, who is also investigating his opponent,
55,000 registrations that were done in the last couple of years, predominantly to minorities. 80% of them were to minorities, and he's questioning the validity of those.
So let's put this
on a continuum. Voter suppression and voter fraud are on a continuum. Voter fraud is red meat, and it hardly ever happens. Let's be real.
That's really right. Hardly
ever happens, and it is used as a talking point and a scare tactic to suppress voters.
So which is worse, Libby, voter fraud or voter suppression in your mind?
I think the most dangerous is voter suppression,
but I think
voter fraud is just a red herring, and it's a marketing term. It's another way of suppressing the voters.
And Alan, she is your student. She is a political scientist that is your student.
She was my student, too.
She doesn't want to remember that.
I always remember that.
Voter suppression is also what President Trump and Attorney General Sessions are doing by bringing up voter fraud. They are trying to suppress the vote. That is what they're trying to do.
And JP, that's why I love you.
That's it.
JP, okay, you're the only one he likes this morning.
You don't love me?
JP, you're exactly right.
I think I said that already, but that's okay.
Yes.
JP can say it, and he's right. I can say it, and it's okay, Alan. I got your number.
Nothing personal.
Right.
Oh, boy.
Get out and vote, folks.
Things are going downhill here.
Right.
Well, I'm glad we only have 45 minutes left.
But the notion of voter fraud really is, I have a bridge I'd like to sell you, because it doesn't happen. There have been umpteen studies into voter fraud.
But voter suppression does happen.
Oh, absolutely. Voter suppression. Look, I remember all the president's men, when they interviewed Donald Segretti, you know, there was a term he used that started with rat and ends in an ing, and I'm not going to say what's in the middle. And that, you know, that was the beginning. That was the beginning in the modern day of voter suppression. It's been going on for decades in order and
centuries. After the Civil War, when they said you had to own property or pass a test, an intelligence test, or Jim Crow laws for voter suppression.
While we're on the subject,
yes,
there's a one vote difference in the state Senate right now.
Correct.
If the state Senate goes Democratic, you're going to see all kinds of liberalization of our voting laws, which are going to encourage people to get out there and vote. Maybe even such incredible things as what we have in Massachusetts, a very good state, as early voting.
Early voting and same-day registration.
And that is all part of that continuum you were talking about,
Libby. Yes. You know, what will really be interesting to see if it happens, if the Senate goes Democratic, as to whether or not there will be real election law reform put forward and actually passed. Early voting, you know, same-day registration.
No excuse absentee ballot.
Has the governor supported those initiatives?
He says he does.
He's been pretty actively saying
that he would sign those bills.
How about having all of the primaries on one day rather than 17 different primaries?
That's a big one. Wow. We have so many primaries. And how about if you want to change your party affiliation? You have to do it like 16
days.
Months
yeah,
ahead.
Right, yeah, right.
Okay.
Let me just say one more thing, and that is that the Assembly, we assume, has always been progressive about these things.
Yes, Alan.
Because they knew full well that the Senate
wouldn't
was going to say
the
no.
But this is going to be the proof.
Remember that those assemblymen got there under this system.
That's right.
Not under a reform.
Exactly right. And that's the problem.
So the test will be whether the Assembly continues to have those feelings.
And while we're doing the litany here before we go to a break, there is also the only other issue that I would add is this stupidity of having different voting hours throughout the state.
Oh, well, so you don't even know what time you're saying.
Well, it's only on election days.
It's only on primary days.
It's not fair.
It isn't fair.
Well, it's
noon to nine isn't enough time to for
so
people
can
who
I
vote
not.
Vote.
Right, absolutely. It should be 6 a.m.
to
9 p.m. for
Correct.
Both. It's a matter of a cost savings for upstate, you know, for non-urban areas.
It's
Syracuse. Yes. Syracuse, Buffalo, Rochester, New York City is all 6 a.m. to 9 p.m. on primary day. The thing about merging all the primaries together, I think that's absolutely right. I think it should be in June because right now when you do a primary in September and then you have to revamp to go in November, it makes life much more difficult. But I just want to say one thing, and that is this. New York State, in its wisdom, put education votes in May to keep it out of the partisan process. And I will say this until the day I die, that those votes need to stay in May and not on the November ballot, because then we will further politicize education votes. And that's what we do not want to do.
And what about library votes?
It's the same.
They're in May, same thing. That's important.
Some library votes are in May. If it works out right, and
school budgets, right? That whole
thing. Yeah, that's a whole. I mean, we could do a whole segment on that if you want.
No, I don't want to do that today.
But library votes, education.
I will care about that at some point, but not today.
Library votes, school budget votes should be in May. Should not be on the November ballot.
I think I'm on a different side because politics is the authoritative allocation of scarce resources, and I have no problem with anything like this being political because I think some parties are basically better in this stuff than others. Enough.
Enough.
Okay. Let's take a break. When we come back, enough. When we come back, we'll have more right after this. Well, good morning. We got a scrappy group this morning. I like
it. Feisty.
This is good.
Everybody's bad. I'm good.
No, look, we're all okay. We're all good. You're great. Everything's fine.
Everybody's good.
Good morning. Let me just reintroduce the panel. Alan Chartok is here, Helen DeFossis, JP Miller, Mike Spain, Libby Post. I'm Joe Donahue, and we welcome your letters. Panel at WAMC.org. We have a couple. We'll go to those, and we'll move on to some other stuff.
Okay.
But not too far away from what we've been talking about today.
All right. Word was at my new Lebanon polling spot around 9 a.m. was twice as crowded than usual, even for presidential election. Big turnout. Good news for Dems, Alan? I don't know.
I don't know.
I know one thing. I know, for example, Andrew Cuomo does not win upstate New York, right? So there are a lot of Republicans in upstate New York. Helen, you're looking for
a way.
So there are a lot of Republicans in upstate New York, and it may well be that a lot of them are turning out.
I was just thinking that they're expecting many more women than usual, many more senior citizens, and many more young people to turn out this election.
And what do you make of that?
Well, I'm just wondering how that would affect your argument.
I would also say that turnout usually would benefit the party that's not in power. It shows that people are going out and they want to make a change. I would say that high turnout would benefit the party not in power, i.e. the Democrats.
Yeah, but this year you've got a real competition, right, between Obama and Trump to turn out their people, between the Democrats and the Republicans. I mean, there's really a competitive issue.
What do you think, Mike?
I don't know. I guess I think that the I don't know. I'm just going to listen.
Okay, fair enough.
I think Democratic turnout is going to be very high.
Well, let's put it this way. From all of your lips to God's ear.
Right.
Well, look at all the people that early voted. Right. Millions more than have ever early
voted before. The question, though, is whether the early voters are just the same people who normally vote during primaries, or whether it is new people. And in some cases, there's indications in New York that it's new people.
Yes, that's right.
By the way, this is the meeting we have, like, every time we do the lockbox.
Yeah.
Are the people who are given money in the lockbox, are they the same people, or is that going to hurt
I think
us
that's
during
a good
the fund drive?
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And the answer is, it's
who
either...
cares?
Well, it's either right or wrong.
Well, the difference between this, why it's not a good analogy, is people can give twice.
Right.
Where you
can't
vote twice.
Right.
We
hope.
Well, unless there's voter fraud, and then you can vote twice.
But if there's voter suppression, nobody
votes. Right, then nobody votes. Yeah.
Okay, so...
Letters.
So we answered that as best to our best of our ability.
Martin, who
writes quite frequently and who's a good guy, says governor's races. If the Democrats could win a good majority of the 36 governor's races, I will consider the midterms a success, even if they fail in the House and Senate. Oh, my stomach.
Really? Wow.
The voter suppression laws and gerrymandering are two of the biggest threats to our democracy, and they take place at the state level. The GOP knew this in 2010, and it led to big gains in the federal level. If we can roll that back, it would be a huge step forward. Martin is right about one thing. The Republicans were extremely bright. And they knew that if they could take the state legislatures, they could gerrymander
That's
them.
Right.
And they did do that. But I don't know that I would want to be saying, Martin, or to anybody else, it would be okay, if you lose the House.
Well, I think he's speaking to your point.
Yeah.
If we take the states, then redistricting is coming up. And we'll be able to redistrict in a more fair way.
And it's also something
where the
media is focused, obviously, on the House and the Senate. But these governor's races, that is what's going to set the tone for what happens over the next decade in America. And seeing those counts tonight as to how many Republicans lose is going to be a big omen for what will happen further on down the line.
And I'm not sure the Democratic Party's paid enough attention to those gubernatorial races.
Do you have an example? I mean, obviously, Florida is the big one.
I just think that we haven't really focused our energies on that. We've
that's
been
because,
more focused on the Congress.
Right, but that's because they're local races. You know,
well,
people see gubernatorial races as local races because they're state-based. So, you know, only when you have a Ron DeSantis who makes an incredibly racist comment like he did, monkey around this election, that it gets national news so people are paying attention.
But the Republican National Committee considers gubernatorial races very important.
They
and
do.
I don't think the Democratic National Committee has put enough attention on them.
Well,
that's a fair point.
You take a look at Georgia. Those are really realigning, if you think about it, realigning concepts of a black female winning in Georgia,
that's right,
or a black man winning in Florida.
That's right.
Those are new dynamics this year, though.
That's right. And, you know, we could learn from the election of Barack Obama, because when he ran, there was a huge African-American turnout, which is, okay, we believe in this guy and we're going to turn out. And they won. And that's why I've always thought that if the Democrats were wise, they would nominate Deval Patrick, for example.
Which they haven't done.
On their presidential line the next time around. Anyway, Kevin says, Trump, good morning, panel. I agree with what Helen said on Friday. I think it was her who said that Trump rallies could not be covered by the networks. Alan, you disagreed. I don't remember that either. I get that he's the president. What'd you say?
I don't remember any of that.
Could or should.
I get that he's the president and he must be covered. But in my view, he is our first president with an asterisk above his name. The asterisk is earned because he is unusually unfit, unqualified, untethered, delusional, divisive, dangerous, diversionary, disgusting, demagogic.
I think that's a personal asterisk, though, unfortunately.
Adolescent
James
bully.
Buchanan had an asterisk because he caught a cold at his inauguration and
right.
died 6 weeks later.
Right. Yes.
Who was Roger Maris had an asterisk, right?
Who?
Roger Maris.
He's a baseball player.
Right.
Baseball for the Yankees.
That's because he played more games than Babe Ruth when he hit his 60 home runs. Babe Ruth did it in fewer games.
Come on.
Wow.
And you know everything,
you are
Mike.
A font
everything.
Of
I love Mike. And as Senators Cruz and Sanders said during the campaign, a pathological liar. Anyway, Mr. Trump's nationwide rallies are not news. We've seen this movie before. Enough already. Okay. And then Michael says, voter fraud, election fraud, voter suppression. Voter fraud is fraud perpetuated by a voter. Election fraud is a fraud perpetuated by a candidate, board of elections, state, county, municipality, software engineer, manufacturer, anyone, group, and overseas elections. Voter suppression is a form of election fraud, as the voters have no say in the policy and is perpetrated by overseers of the election, and that's Michael from Newburgh. Well, that settles that. And R. Jeremy wrote and said, winning versus losing. Please talk about what happens if the Dems win and or lose the House. Oh, boy. Do I think this is a good question?
I do, too.
Because if the Democrats win the House, you better believe that they will be going after all of the investigations that the feckless Republicans have not done in their due diligence in, all along. So if they win the House, if the Democrats win the House, that's going to happen. And if
I'm sorry, that word was feckless?
Feckless.
Okay.
What did you think? Did you guys...
Reckless?
Yeah.
No.
Yeah, that was
it.
Reckless.
But reckless.
What about the scenario where the Democrats do win in the House of Representatives and take control, but by a very, very thin margin? It would require the Democrats who lead the House to reach across the aisle and work with the Republicans to get some things that have to happen that haven't been happening done, like infrastructure and, you know, clean water bills, the different things like that.
Hey, Mikey, yeah. Did it work the other way around? Did the Republicans have to
reach
across the aisles? I do
acknowledge that the Republicans have missed the opportunity to do that because they were controlled by their extremely right-wing faction, the Tea Party. But the Democrats have an opportunity here to be better.
But if you talk to members of Congress now, they'll tell you that there's such suspicion of bipartisanship, of any kind of across-the-aisle activity.
There's a lot of anger.
There is a lot of anger, and it's too bad because our country needs that more than ever, and we're not getting it.
How many letters you got there, Alan?
Three more.
All right, let's do those real quick, and then we'll take a break.
Okay.
Ray doesn't mind.
John says, voter suppression. I've heard more than one CBC radio program talk about the widespread voter suppression going on around the country in districts with people of color. I have no hope that we'll ever hear about that on U.S. media, excepting our WAMC.
Or how widespread
it really is. And then Kevin says, Paul Ryan.
Okay.
If Alan is right and Paul Ryan will run for president, tomorrow would be a day to grab the election results, whichever way they go, and grow some integrity and speak out against the Trump regime. Neither Ayn Rand nor any of her characters could stomach Trump. Ryan needs to step up, speak up, and lead. Now, Kevin, just let me tell you what I said. I said he wants to run for president. That doesn't mean he is going to run for president, and it doesn't mean he can get the nomination to run for president.
He hasn't been getting very far.
No.
No, not much traction yet in Washington.
He's been tamped down by Trump pretty effectively.
That's right.
And by the way, as long as Trump isn't impeached, he's going to be the candidate.
Oh, you know, that's
Trump.
Well, who would dare step
forward and say,
to run against him?
Well, I think the House will likely impeach him pretty quickly once they take over the Congress,
But
the Senate won't approve it.
Okay, but is there anybody who thinks?
I got to go to news.
Is any possibility the Senate will go Democratic?
And we will leave you with that question. And
Ta-da!
we will examine it right after news with Ray Graff. All right. Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our discussion this morning. We're going to talk. We're going to read some letters before things get uglier in this room. And
I'd like to say a few things later on, too, about the competition between Obama and Trump.
Okay.
That's been building.
Do you want to say that now?
No, I just think it's been
before
fascinating.
You're going to get on a plane soon. Say it now.
I know. Well, I think it's been fascinating to watch the two of them come at each other.
Yeah, good versus bad.
Mm-hmm. And it personifies, you know, it's personalizing the race.
Good versus evil.
It's really good versus evil. Instead of good versus bad, it's good versus evil.
But it's also, it's good versus, it's also, well, check that. It also seems to be, though, that it is, it's energizing the base on both sides, right?
Right.
And also, as far as, and not that we, historians worry about this stuff, not that we have to worry about this stuff, but when it comes to legacy, this is not hurting the Obama legacy, is it?
No. And the Democratic Party does not have a leader right now. And I think he's been moving himself into that role.
I think it's
a huge benefit for the Democrats because Obama, whether people voted or didn't vote for him, he is a good, nice guy, and he is not
he's
the boogeyman.
He's really good on the stump.
And he makes a great speech.
I mean, he is great on the
stump. I love him on the stump.
And he is not as divisive as the Clintons, who previous to Obama were kind of the people that would go out. So he's been a huge benefit for the Democrats.
Really has. And he's been really
he didn't
working.
Turn out the vote in the midterm elections when he was president.
Well, but historically, that's the way it works.
I know.
People didn't pay. That's right. People didn't pay attention to the midterm election.
And I think that historically doesn't matter anymore. We're in a new era. And the fact that an ex-president is going head-to-head with a current president is extraordinarily unusual.
And again, back to the good and evil thing, during his midterms and not bringing out the vote, the times are very different than they are now.
Well, absolutely.
Also,
there's much more at stake.
Midterms of a president's first term are historically bad, and people are saying, "Well, will Trump lose the 23 seats?" I think it's a near certainty that he will. I don't want to jinx, but I think it's a near certainty. You look at in 2010, Obama lost 63 seats. Are you telling me that Trump's going to do better than Obama? Bill Clinton in 1994 lost 54 seats.
Which is why, JP, he is running around like a crazy man, going to all of these places because he wants to not have happened to him what happened to the other guy.
Well, he's caught now because he doesn't want to say the race is about me.
He does know he is.
No, wait. Yeah. He started out saying it's not about me.
Wait.
I don't want you to interpret this as a referendum about me in case it was a loser.
Yeah, except.
Then he decided, why don't I start saying it is about me?
I should have waited. You're right about that.
Well, I think we're also now leading.
Helen, we saw it coming down Fifth Avenue. That's the problem.
The question that was hanging as we went to break was, what about the Senate?
Thank you, Mike. I wanted to go there. Because,
thank you for remembering.
Yeah, no, I was remembering it too.
Oh, good.
But I think the thing to watch tonight is whether or not Cruz loses.
Cruz is going to lose.
Well, I don't know.
Hold on. You mean Lion Ted?
What would you conclude from that?
Come on, Ted.
Oh, if Cruz loses.
If Cruz loses.
Then I think there's a very good chance the Senate will go Democratic.
Wow.
But as a professional odds maker, I would say the chances of that happening aren't that good. But should it happen? I think that it will show what the wave is going to look like, what the blue wave is going to look like.
You don't think it would just show what Texas politics are like?
No.
No.
You think we could generalize?
Yeah. No? The answer is yes, I can.
Okay.
We're both political scientists and we're both duking it out, but yes, I do.
Texas is such a special environment, you know, that's what I was thinking.
Lovely way of putting it.
I would also say Beto O'Rourke is a tremendously charismatic candidate. He's great on the issues. He raised a ton of money, but he is very progressive for Texas. If they put up someone with his natural skills with a more moderate voting record, I think Ted Cruz would be out. But he is a true progressive. And imagining that people of Texas voting him as their senator is hard to imagine.
You know,
Ann Richards.
We've talked about this in the past.
Only for one term.
We've talked about this in the past. And I have to say, I think Bernie... Retrospectively, I think Bernie could have won the election. He's a socialist.
Yeah.
He's out there. But people in that election, who knew, were looking for something different. They wanted something different.
And they got it.
And I think in the case of Cruz, there may be, because he is immensely unpopular. People don't like him. And as a result, they may be looking for something, say, just there, Ted, take that. And by the way, he's had a personality transplant since this thing began. He is not the obnoxious guy.
I think he's
the
Howard Cosell of politics.
How so?
Well, I mean, people didn't like Howard Cosell either.
And what happened to Howard Cosell?
He was very popular.
No, he died.
No, he got fired.
Yes, but
he got fired for making
a
racist remark.
I know, but he was very popular for a long time.
Yeah. Yes, but
I just think Ted Cruz is playing a lot of angles.
Mark says, ballot problems. Just wanted to say I voted this morning and witnessed an older lady having an issue because she accidentally voted for multiple people in the same slot. We need easier ballots with people listed once. Ranked voting and more accessible absentee voting. I know corrections officer who aren't voting because they are stuck working. Well, a couple of things here. We are hearing here at the radio station a tremendous amount from people about ranked voting. In other words, you put your first, second, and third choice down. If your first choice doesn't win, it goes to the second choice.
Some states do that.
Yes, some states do it. Do I think that that's going to happen with the people in the political class in New York? I doubt it very much.
Well, I thought you were going to say something else, too, that a lot of your listeners probably want voting reform, and they'd like it easy, longer hours, maybe spread over a couple of days, more online voting. I mean, there's so many more reforms that could be made.
Okay. Already limited parking to vote. In the sleepy town of Akard, 400-plus votes by 9:30, and that's from Mike.
Is that Massachusetts, Akard?
No,
it's
New York.
It's where everybody owns
a foreign car.
Akard plays a musical instrument, accordion, and agrees with each other.
On the Akard.
Yeah, it's Akard. Green County.
Yeah.
What's the one with the foreign car?
Yeah.
That one, too.
Honda Accord.
Accord. Yeah, you are so right, Joe.
I thought I listened to the fun draft.
Joe, I stand corrected.
I was only quoting you. That's all right.
Right. And Daniel says, voting hours. Dear panel, I worked the night shift and was unable to vote in the primary. I sometimes miss very local elections, but was really angry to not get to the polls for the primary. I'm deprived of enough sleep and feel ripped off with the hours offered. And that's Daniel, a voter since 1980.
A letter that politicians should hear. Mm-hmm.
And then from Nicholas, president. Dear panel, it was William Henry Harrison who died after the long speech.
Oh, my gosh, you're right.
Not James Buchanan.
I'm sorry, Mr. Buchanan.
May you rest in peace.
Right. Buchanan, unfortunately.
And apparently you were already. You were.
Yeah. Bravo Buchanan, to the letter writer.
Buchanan, unfortunately, was president for the full term, presiding over the continued divisions that led to the American Civil War. I think most people think Buchanan was probably the worst president we ever had.
Right, right. Yeah. William Henry Harrison didn't get a chance to be good or bad.
I thought Chester Arthur was up there.
No, Chester Arthur is misunderstood.
Oh, yeah, was he? Okay,
yeah. Very misunderstood. It was
he's our own. He's Albany's own.
Yeah, the people around him were the crooks.
That's right.
Just like Andrew. Andrew, you know. What? Why is everybody staring at me?
Andrew who?
Andrew Cuomo.
Oh.
All those guys going to jail?
You really want to go from Chester Arthur to...
No, I said it was the people around Chester Arthur who were the crooks. And I said, just like Andrew, it was the people around. Did I say something wrong?
Yeah.
Because if I did, I'd like to know better. Good morning, panel. Love your discussion of voter suppression. I just voted at a new location at the Elks Lodge on Route 155, Latham.
Oh, lovely.
There were 89 districts combined in this one location covering a wide area. This location is over 1 mile from the nearest bus line and couldn't be less accessible by foot. I felt like I was on the outskirts of Dodge City. Matt Dillon.
Well, that's Dodge a voter City. Suppression step, too. I mean, if you don't make it possible for people to get to the polls.
Please comment.
Well, I mean, I don't... Okay.
Sincerely, fiercely independent voter who just voted party line D for the first time. That's from Rick.
That's nice.
Is that in all places? I mean, where I have to go, I have to travel?
Right, but if you... If it's a poor neighborhood, for example, you want to make it possible for them to get to
But where was it? It was in Latham, right?
In Latham, wherever it goes around.
But that's a suburb. I mean, I don't know how you... It's not like there's a village of Latham.
I know, but elected officials have to be mindful of these considerations. Do concentrations of people, is it possible for them to get to the polls easily? What if they can't make it?
What if
no public transportation.
You're right. And the politicians have to...
You can't walk in Latham. We're going to walk down Route 9 or something.
And the politicians have to know that to offer rides to people.
That's true.
And polling places are chosen at times to suppress voting.
That's right. Yeah.
It's just that simple.
It's true.
Okay,
and then Dennis says, Speaker of the House. Hi, folks. Would you expect to be Speaker of the House if the Dems win back the House? Someone other than Nancy Pelosi? I can tell you right now, Nancy Pelosi is going to be the Speaker.
Yep.
If they win.
You really think that?
Yes.
Yep. Oh, wow.
Yes, I do. No, I think she got enough.
Well, she hasn't been backing down on anything, but why do you think that?
There's nobody else emerging with enough
support.
Because
that's just the way it is.
Because nobody's willing to take her on.
Well, at least nobody getting traction, as you would say.
Yeah.
Because it's just the way it is.
Antonio Delgado, who's the Democrat in the the 19th district, challenging incumbent John Faso. He said that he has yet to decide who he would support. He would wait if he's elected.
Smart move.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, JP.
No, I would just say that if there's a huge wave, if the Democrats win 63 new seats, like what happened in 2010, I think there will be enough.
That was exactly my question.
Pelosi.
When you have a new class coming in, and you have a new look with momentum behind it, does that not put pressure on the incumbent speaker?
Huge.
Well, you know,
huge.
Nancy Pelosi, one of her strengths is raising money for the House candidates, and I don't know what she's been
including doing. Including a lot of these.
That's right. Yeah. That's right. Really, so they may owe her.
Yeah. Well, you may be right. You all may be right. Just let's everybody write down. Alan said, if the Democrats take it, Nancy Pelosi will be the speaker. And while there's some disagreement,
Mike, make a note.
I think there's a chance on the other side.
Or tape it or something.
And there's a member of Congress in Long Island, Kathleen Rice, who kind of famously opposes Pelosi. You could see her run or someone else emerging to run
now,
against
in
Pelosi.
Our, in our final moments here, let's just say
we're going to die.
No, and I mean, just for our show. Don't worry, we're going to be on until 3 a.m.
Forever.
So we're in for the long haul today, but. Am I overstating, and please correct me if I am, yes, we're looking at the races, we're looking at the House, we're looking at the Senate, all of these national races, but in our corner of the world, whether we live upstate or downstate or in Massachusetts or Vermont, the Delgado-Faso race seems to be the race that everybody is watching.
It does.
It's getting national attention.
Right. It is.
As so many commercials, and the commercials are being played on national news.
Because they were so racist.
And yet, when the list comes out of the ones to watch, I have not seen this one as part of the long list.
I've seen it in national stories.
It definitely is.
I guess I'm wrong.
I mean, not every story has everything in it, but clearly it's being watched closely. Yeah.
So, Sarah,
going into this election— the polls are pretty darn close, too close to call, as I like
That's
to
right.
say.
Well, and, the thing I don't understand, yeah, yesterday in the New York Times poll, they had Delgado about a point ahead, and then 8% undecided.
Mm-hmm.
Tell me how political folks, tell me what that's about.
Plus a third party candidate.
Right, plus Diane Neal, who's in there to be a spoiler.
A margin of error, but go ahead.
Right. Well, I wouldn't be surprised that the undecided vote would be that high.
Why?
Well, because...
There's such a clear delineation between
know,
the two.
But it's tense, it's close, and sometimes people don't want to make
And is
a
there
choice.
Another possibility?
No, people don't want to say.
And what's the
say?
Other possibility?
People don't want to say who they're voting for.
And there's another possibility that there's enough of people who know nothing.
Well,
and so
that.
When you get the telephone
right,
call
right.
and they say, who are you voting for? So,
I have not decided
so,
yet.
So
will those people actually go out and vote?
Well, they asked that
maybe
question,
not.
Too.
Yeah,
maybe not.
Okay. Know,
could it
know,
also
you know.
Be that the techniques used to make these, do these polls are outdated and they're not accurately reflecting what the
well, now, see, that's,
I can
that's
tell
my
you.
Brother's contention.
Which is what?
Which is what?
Go ahead. About the technique, because we only have about 2 minutes.
Okay, I did a poll for one of my libraries.
I think Carol
just
has a letter.
This in the last 6 months.
Susan or Carol?
And it's getting more and more difficult to get people on the phone.
Oh, yeah.
To answer the phone.
I don't answer the phone.
You know, to do it that way. They did some of it online.
You took
and
my
I'm
call.
Like, well, how do we know that people aren't doing it twice if they're going online? I mean, it is getting more and more difficult to do these polls and to get an accurate read.
Yeah, that's all.
What
true.
Does Sarah say?
Okay, Sarah says, greetings. I'm just leaving the polls, having worked for my town from 7 to 10. I've done this for 10 years and have never seen such strong turnout. Very exciting. And that's Sarah from Sheffield, Massachusetts,
where there's
early voting.
Right?
And I was an early voter. And there were a lot of people early voting when I was. Yeah,
I think we're going to be pleasantly surprised.
I would also
by the turnout, by the results.
I would also say the Faso Delgado race is interesting because it is a bellwether. If you see Delgado win big, that I think means it's going to be a big night for the Democrats. Mm-hmm. If you see Katko kind of holding on there, it might not be such a
but
wave.
But you're
right.
Saying Katko's been going to hold on the entire time.
We
not really
but
said
it tells,
that he was going to lose.
But it tells you so much. This particular race tells you so much about where people's heads are at because it's the question when John Faso said to me the other day, hey, Alan, if Hillary were the president, I'd walk into this congressional seat.
Right.
So what he was saying is this is a referendum on Trump.
And it's a true swing district. That Faso's district went twice for Obama, then went for Trump. It's right. A true swing district.
This entire election, this entire midterm is a test of Trump. It's what this is all about. It's all about him.
Okay, so I'm going to go around the table, mm-hmm. keep it short, but what do you believe the big headline will be tomorrow? Libby.
Blue wave sweeps the nation.
Mike.
Dems narrowly pick up House of Representatives, Senate stays Republican.
JP.
I would say big blue wave.
Yeah, Dems overtake expectations.
Alan.
I didn't think what Mike said.
We will.
Really?
I'm trying to make up.
Okay, fine.
Oh, that's nice.
Aww. All right. You guys hug it out. We will be back. Obviously, a lot of coverage throughout WAMC today. We will be, of course, Midday Magazine, Northeast Report Late Edition, Vox Pop this afternoon at 2 o'clock from Vox 2 to Top. 3. JP, you'll be on that program. I believe, yes.
Today, yeah.
Correct. Thank you. So we'll have a lot of coverage. And then, of course, the coverage begins at 7 o'clock. Alan and I will be on tonight. Tomorrow morning, full coverage and morning edition. And then the roundtable live from the Linda.
What time is that?
From 9 to 11. From 9 to 11. All right. So thank you all very much. Have a great day voting. And we'll be back after this short date.